Welcome again to Lost in Science. We're still recording at home, but we are producing the show every week nonetheless with a whole bunch of new stories about science for you this week. My name's Stu, and on the show this week, I'm going to be talking about... I just saw the new Wonder Woman film the other week. Have you seen that yet, Claire?
No, I haven't seen it, and I've heard mixed reviews, I have to say. I'm going to be totally honest with you, Stu. It's been mixed, so...
Yeah, it's...
I don't know if I'm going to see it.
That's one word to describe. One thing that happens, though, is we discover the origin. I remember back in the cartoon of Wonder Woman, she had an invisible jet. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah, of course. That was big.
So the origin of the invisible jet is in this film. But I'm going to be talking about something else that's been made invisible through the wonders of science.
What?
Not the wonders of magic. Invisible wood.
Invisible
Can't
wood?
See, yeah. Can't see the wood for the science, you could say.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, are these invisible trees? Is this an invisible forest? Is that, how far does this go?
Oh, look, it goes all the way to the top. Follow the money. No, it's a new method for making wood into a completely different product than we may have ever thought of before.
Okay.
But more details on that later. It's actually similar to something you will be familiar with, but I'll explain what that is later on in the show. Claire, what have you got for us this week?
Well, Stu, it is a new year, but unfortunately COVID-19 is still with us. And this week there have been some reports about the Russian vaccine, the Russian COVID-19 vaccine, has finally released their phase three trial results in The Lancet. I don't know if you read about this. This will be, I guess, you know, another vaccine for us. But I thought, you know, when I heard that, I was like, oh, really? Okay, this is interesting. So we're going to have a look back at what we know about this vaccine, what the results say, what the research says, and, you know, there's been a couple of question marks about whether we should really trust it because of the way they've gone about it. So I just wanted to have a bit of a read about that and bring you my research.
That sounds great. I know people have been concerned. Now, let's not get confused here, but people have been concerned because everybody was rushing their vaccines, right? Right? But you are talking about the country of Russia, of course.
I am the country of Russia, and I'm going to talk a lot about this, but they've named their vaccine. I mean, it's not like the AstraZeneca vaccine or the Pfizer vaccine. I mean, the coolest thing about the Russian vaccine is that it's called Sputnik V.
Sputnik V, as in Sputnik 5? Is that what they've... Is that?
You will have to listen connection? To the story to find okay. out, Stu. Lucky you're here, and we're all here.
Lucky we are all here. Can't wait to get into it, so stay tuned. The last few years, people around the world have been getting very active about the amount of plastic that we produce in the world. And a lot of people are trying to reduce the amount of plastic they use day to day. And this is especially true for single-use plastics like food wrappers and packaging, which is usually thrown away after the food is eaten or after the package has been opened, creates a waste problem as plastics, as we all know, do not break down quickly. They take years and years and centuries in some cases to break down. But there is a century-old alternative which doesn't seem to get much attention, even though I'm sure we all know the name of this product. It's called cellophane.
Oh, now cellophane.
You know what cellophane is, right?
Yeah. I used to make a lot of crafty things with cellophane in primary school.
Yeah. And cellophane was invented in the early 20th century. It's made from reconstituted cellulose, which is the basic building block of plant tissues. And you've probably heard of sellotape, right?
Yes.
Guess what sellotape is made out of?
Is it reconstituted cellulose?
It is. It's basically cellophane with sticky on one side.
Whoa.
So the actual brand of sellotape is made of cellophane.
Wow.
So the cellulose itself comes from wood pulp or from cotton, though you can use other plants. You just need the cellulose. That's the part of the plant that you're going for. So you can pretty much make it out of any kind of plant. They make it into a solution called viscose, which is then treated and formed into sheets, which are called cellophane. Or you can turn it into fibers, which are called rayon, which you can then weave into fabric, and you can make clothing and fabrics out of this same stuff. Now, the big advantage of cellophane and rayon over plastics is that it's biodegradable. Because it's just cellulose, it breaks down in the environment quite quickly, and it's because it's made of plant-based materials. So they can also treat cellophane and rayon to increase its water repellency so it doesn't break down as quickly, and that slows it down a little bit, but it still decays once it's in the environment. If it's in a soil environment or even if it's in a water or marine environment, it will break down over time. So we don't have that. We don't have that problem with the microplastics and the floating, you know, islands of plastic garbage in the ocean, which, you know, would be a good thing. I think we could all agree on that.
Yeah, we could do with a little less plastic.
So cellophane seems to be an obvious solution for food packaging as a replacement for plastic. It was actually used for that purpose when it came on the market. It was one of the first products that allowed people to see what was in the packet when they bought food, so they used it for packaging meat and all sorts of different things. One downside to the production of these reconstituted cellulose products is the use of carbon disulfide in the manufacturing process, which is quite dangerous for humans. So the workers in the factories could get exposed to this this chemical. It's not good for them. But they have developed newer processes that improve the manufacturing. They actually can reuse the chemicals in the manufacturing process. So they don't have it as a waste product. They actually recapture it and use it all over again. And one of the advantages, as I said, it's transparent to light, so you can see through it. Now, you might think, well, if you can see through cellulose, has anyone ever tried to make other products out of cellulose for other purposes that you could allow light to pass through? And if you think about a plant needs light to pass through its cell walls, which is what cellulose is, to capture that light to turn it into energy using photosynthesis, the process that drives most of life on Earth. So the cellulose itself is obviously transparent. You might think if wood could be processed in a similar way, it could become transparent too, which would greatly increase its potential as a building material and open up all sorts of mind-blowing possibilities of using this transparent wood. The reason wood is not transparent is that there's a substance in the wood called lignin, which is the stuff that gives wood its brown colour and stops light passing through. So all wood has a sort of brownish colour, depending on what kind of wood it is, and that's from this lignin, which is in the wood.
And is lignin a type of protein that's quite structural? Is it do you need it for structure, or is it just the cellulose?
No, the lignin actually strengthens the wood as well. So the more lignin you have, the stronger the particular wood is. Over the years, people have tried different methods for removing the lignin from wood, so you get this transparent wood. Now, that would also weaken the wood at the same time.
Would it weaken the wood, Stu?
How much wood would weaken the wood if you remove all the lignin from the wood? But basically what they've tried to do is immerse sheets of wood in various solvents. It's expensive, it's time-consuming, produces a lot of waste chemicals because you've got basically these huge baths of solvents to get rid of once the lignin is removed. A team in China have just published a brand new method of treating wood, which doesn't remove the lignin from the structure of the wood, so it's intact. It just removes the colour from it instead. Now, what would you think you might use to remove colour from something.
Bleach?
That's exactly right. That is exactly what they used. They basically have used a method, and they published this paper in January in the journal Science Advances. They describe this method of painting hydrogen peroxide, which is H2O2, onto sheets of wood of various thicknesses, but the one that worked best was about 0.42 millimetres, so about half a millimetre thick sheet of wood, which was, you know, sliced very carefully. Then they left them out in the sun.
Yeah,
and
right.
The bleach did its work, and it really is not a very high-tech solution to this problem. The combination of the bleach and the UV radiation bleaches the chromophores, which are the substance in the lignin that gives it its colour, so that they're not coloured anymore and they don't reflect or diffuse any light. So the light passes through the sheet of wood.
Hang on. I have a question. So what, can we all just try this at home now?
If you've got a thin enough slice of wood and enough bleach, you could probably give it a go. What they then did, though, and this is the techie part of it, really,
yeah,
is that they treated the sheets of wood with a polymer that improved the light transmission. So basically they filled in all of the spaces in the wood with another substance that allowed better transmission of light through the sheet, so it's actually almost as clear as glass. And if you hold it up in front of something, you can see through and see whatever's on the other side of it. Best of all, in this process, the wood retains its structural properties because they haven't removed the lignin.
Wow,
they've just
cool.
made it invisible.
Oh,
so it's as strong as wood and it's lighter than glass, which means you can use it as a building material directly. You could basically hammer a window onto your wall when
Whoa.
There was a hole in the wall. Don't need to build a window frame. Makes it hard to open the window, but still, it's pretty amazing.
And is it really as clear as glass?
It's like a dirty windscreen, almost.
Right, okay.
That's how clear it is. So there's photos that I saw in the actual paper that they published, which show, yeah, you can definitely identify, you know, flowers and plants and stuff through the glass. You can see through it quite easily. Because it's not as smooth as glass, it's not quite as transmittive. But there's any number of applications in building and other things that you could use it for. The other great thing about wood is that it's got much better insulating properties than glass. Glass allows the transfer of heat energy quite readily. So heat and cold don't transmit as readily through these wooden panels as they would through glass, which is a further advantage, make buildings with invisible wood windows much more energy efficient than those with the silica-based glass windows.
And is the polymer that they use to treat it in the last step, is it really expensive, or do they outline, you know, how hard it is to come by?
No, all of the stuff they used, they just bought. So they didn't have to make anything special. It was kind of, it's an epoxy resin that they used. So everything that they did was pretty much off the shelf from the hardware store, effectively.
And then my next question, Stu, is when's it coming to Bunnings?
Well, all I can say is I reckon probably pretty soon. There's a lot of uses for things like Perspex and other plastic glass alternatives, which this would effectively replace as a cheaper alternative. One of the best things about this process is because they use hydrogen peroxide as the bleaching agent, the byproduct of the process, hydrogen peroxide is H2O2, one of the oxygens gets used up in the process of bleaching, and what you're left with is H2O, which is plain water. So the byproduct of the bleaching process is just water. So it's a really clean production cycle to make this quite amazing new product. And it kind of makes me think, why did nobody think of this before?
Amazing.
21st century, it took us to figure out that you can make wood invisible. Now, assuming this can be scaled up for mass production, as we've been saying, we may soon have a completely new building material, which can be used for construction, but also they can use it for things like, if you think of photoelectric panels for solar electricity generation, instead of using glass for those, you could use these see-through wood panels. All sorts of applications, which probably we haven't even started to think of yet because it's such a novel concept.
Hey, Stu, did you know that Sputnik and I share a birthday?
I didn't know that.
It wasn't the same year, but we both launched into this world on October 4. Sputnik's a few years older than me. Sputnik launched in 1957, but there you have it. We share a launch day.
And what year did you launch?
We don't have to go into that right now. But anyway, rest assured, Sputnik's older. So Sputnik, of course, was the first artificial satellite to be launched into orbit. And what a huge accomplishment it was for Russia. They saw it as a massive technological win at the height of the space race for the Soviet Union. And this week, Sputnik is back in the news. But this time, there's an additional letter, Sputnik V. And I hinted at what the V was for in the intro. Have you guessed it yet, Stu?
Is the V for vaccine?
The V is for vaccine. It is Sputnik the vaccine. Apparently, this is sort of like Russia trolling America as a direct reference to the fact that Americans were very surprised and taken aback when they heard Sputnik's beeping from its orbit, and they wanted to pay homage to that moment in time, that moment of sort of brilliance on the world stage of Sputnik. And they think it's going to be the same with this vaccine. It is big news this week because the Russians have just published new research in The Lancet, of all journals, leading journal, The Lancet, showing that their vaccine, Sputnik V, is 91.6% effective against COVID-19 disease. 91.6%. It's great.
Yeah, that's really high.
It's very high. It's very high.
So now I was reading something the other day that said we shouldn't compare one study with another study because they've all got slightly different methods
of
how they test these things and how they measure them. But that's well up there with the other vaccines that are out that are already being used.
That seems to be in the same ballpark as the Moderna vaccine and the Pfizer vaccine, which are both the messenger RNA vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
And by the looks of it, is a lot more effective than the AstraZeneca vaccine, which is also in the same sort of group of vaccines as this one. So today I'm going to bring you up to date on what this Sputnik vaccine is, what the research is saying, what the global implications are to have another vaccine at our disposal. So starting with what type of vaccine Sputnik really is. So like I said, just like the AstraZeneca vaccine, the Sputnik vaccine is delivered to the human immune system by an adenovirus vector. As I was alluding to before, the quite controversial part of this vaccine is when you cast your mind back a couple of months ago, as everyone knows, we've all been on this journey together of hearing constantly about all these vaccines and what stage of trial they're up to. You go through vaccines having to go through phase 1 and phase 2 and phase 3 trials before they are approved for use in general population. And these vaccines are getting developed at, as some people like to say, warp speed anyway. So reducing time or cutting out these trials and giving them to the population before they've gone through each of those stages could possibly be dangerous.
So the phase one and two trials will show whether a vaccine can actually mount antibody resistance in a subject. And then you've got your phase three trials, which are there to test the vaccine on a really large number of people, and they're to show whether the vaccine is safe to use. And it's normally done using randomized controlled testing on thousands and thousands of people. And we've seen that with the Moderna vaccine, the AstraZeneca vaccine, and the Pfizer vaccine. Well, unlike all those other vaccines for COVID-19, Russia registered the use of their Sputnik V, or Sputnik V, as it's really called, before the phase three data even was released. So they were like, no, we don't need to, you know, wait for the phase three data that shows whether it's totally safe to use on large numbers of people. We're just going to register it and start giving it to people who really need it within the community. So this happened late last year. And, it means that they were pretty much administering the vaccine to the population, including, I think, most of the scientists who work at developing the vaccine. So they got the vaccine first. But then also, you know, there was news reports of Putin giving it to his daughter and all these other people getting it as well. People were a bit taken aback and critical that Russia would bypass that step. But having said that, they didn't completely bypass it. It's just taken a little bit longer for these phase three results to come out. And that's what has come out this week.
Yeah, so they did actually go through all the steps. They just weren't publicising the information they had necessarily. It is interesting, though, because as far as developing them quickly, I'm pretty sure the AstraZeneca one, which is the Oxford vaccine, they had the effective agent in that vaccine. They had that back in February last year, but they went through all of the steps to test it before they claimed that they had a vaccine, which is, you know, what that's the process that we should be going through. And it was, you know, it was a lot quicker than everyone expected, because there's a lot of willing volunteers who are happy to sign up to try it out. There's a lot of money being thrown at it, which is, you know, it's the reason why it's all happened so fast, I think, more than anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. So as I said before, things changed this week because The Lancet, which, as you know, it's the world's leading medical research journal, published a peer-reviewed research of this phase three data of the Sputnik vaccine. And like I said, it's incredibly promising. So the trial involved 22,000 people taking part in a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial, and it was across 25 hospitals in Moscow. The adenovirus vaccine was given twice, 21 days apart, and now the analysis of the efficacy shows that it is 91.6% effective against at protecting against COVID-19 disease. So like all the other vaccines that we have, we know that it protects people from COVID, but there is no evidence that it can stop transmission of the virus. So we know that, you know, you're much less likely to get the disease, but we don't know if you'll actually stop spreading the disease if you get this. The other really good part of the vaccine is that it doesn't need an as cold a chain. So it doesn't need that -70 degree freezers that the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine need, which means that it's going to be a whole lot easier for developing countries and remote areas to be able to access and roll out to their population. I think there are around 50 countries who've already signed up for the Sputnik vaccine, which is incredible to think that countries who may not, you know, who have been outbid by many richer countries might actually get access to a vaccine from a different source, which is fantastic. And also, just wanted to let everybody know, your gentle reminder, maybe, that if you want to read any of the articles, especially around COVID-19 research, especially to do with vaccines. You can do it yourself. They aren't behind a paywall on The Lancet at the moment. You can find it, and it is called, I mean, I think they might need a catchy title, but it is called Safety and Efficacy of an RAD26 and RAD5 Vector-Based Heterologous Prime Boost COVID-19 Vaccine, an interim analysis of a randomized controlled phase 3 trial in Russia.
So everyone took that down really quickly just then, I'm sure, wrote it down to check it out later.
Just write Sputnik Vaccine Lancet and I'm sure you'll find it. look, maybe it's the second coming of Sputnik, but despite early obfuscation by Russia and some serious messing with the protocols of medical science, the world may just have another extremely effective vaccine against COVID-19 reporting for duty, ready to launch, just like the Soviet satellite it is named after.
That's all we've got time for this week, and we are rapidly running out of time. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook. We are broadcast across Australia on the Community Radio Network with the financial assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. And if you would like to tune in next week, Chris, Stu and Claire will get
locked in fire.
Gotta catch this train.